AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. And by propane. Propane is the energy for everyone, especially farmers. Environmentally friendly propane can fuel most anything on the farm. See how at propane.com. We are talking about two very big challenges for ag on today's AgriTalk. First, we'll get an update on the bird flu situation focused on Iowa, and then we'll learn about efforts by the biofuel industry to get EPA to use the gold standard of modeling for ethanol at this pivotal time for biofuels.
All right, live from Two Challenge Tuesday via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, we begin with a conversation with Iowa Secretary of Agriculture Mike Nagy. Then it's on to Brian Jennings from the American Coalition for Ethanol. Right after the news, Karen Bonert from Farm Journal's Milk. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lorre.
All right, Davis. Hey, thank you so much.
Hey, buddy.
Yeah, how are you doing today, man?
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good.
Yeah? Do you feel good about how your bracket turned out?
I am smug and self-satisfied, Chip. I was
really?
So right from the very beginning, before
man.
The first tip-off, before, you know, before the first stunning three-pointer.
Yeah.
The primary alley-oop.
Yeah.
I was right. I was
you
right.
Were-
All
you had
along,
it
Chip.
From the very beginning, the blue
Here's
shirt
to me.
Did win.
Here's to me.
Here's to you, Davis.
I don't even know who won the game, and I'm still
congratulations
patting myself on the back. Yes.
Congratulations to the Jayhawks of the University of Kansas.
Whoa.
Yes.
Well, that's got to be hard. Those are hard words for you to string together, aren't they?
Very difficult. Very difficult.
Oh,
yes.
I'm so proud of
yeah.
you. You're evolving.
Well,
you're
thank
growing.
You. Thank you. I'm trying.
Proud of you.
I'm trying. You know, doggone it, we had them beat at Fog Allen this year, too, and let it get away.
Wow.
Dang it.
Oh. If only. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
You'll get next year.
But here's the deal. Here's the deal with the Kansas team. They just kept getting better and better and better. And it was a team of role players. Okay, is kind of how I viewed that team. But each one of them played their role really, really well. And when you can get that happening, see, the Iowa State team, the players were interchangeable in the roles around the floor. Okay? That's the difference here. They had to play with as a team with a lot of energy and defense and effort out on the floor. If this Kansas team, if the players showed up and did their job that night, they probably won the basketball game. And last night, especially in that first half, the players showed up and played and got their job done. So,
well, that's great. That's
yeah,
really
it was,
great.
It was interesting to watch.
Well,
okay.
Congratulations to the Kansas basketball men people. That's great.
We've got a lot of ground to cover. Let's get to it. What you got in the news?
Well, Chip, American consumers are apparently beginning to cut costs on mainstays from toothpaste to baby formula as inflation hits a swath of the economy that had thus far proven resistant to substantial price increases. Shoppers are reportedly buying staples in smaller quantities, switching to cheaper store name brands, and more rigorously hunting for deals. The shift is especially pronounced among lower income consumers. It's those lower income consumers that suffer at times like these, Chip.
Absolutely, it is, and it's that it's that segment of the economy that has to recover first in order to build up the rest of the economy as well.
Well, the U.S. Mint has seen its strongest gold sales since 1999. First quarter sales rose 3.5% compared to the same period last year, the Mint's strongest sales quarter in 23 years. Chip, do you reckon the strong gold sales in 99 were surrounding the Y2K thing? People trying to be like, my gosh, is that a thing?
Yeah, absolutely it was. It was absolutely the computer system is going to bust at midnight on January 1 of 2000. And so everybody was stocking up on gold as a store of wealth. Yeah.
Well, according to the Ukrainian military, Russian forces have been preparing for an offensive in Ukraine's southeast as President Zelensky prepared to talk to the United Nations. In Kharkiv, roughly 30 miles from the border, unrelenting bombardment has left parts of the city of 1.4 million unrecognizable. Meanwhile, the U.S. Treasury has banned Russia from accessing more than $600 million in U.S.-held reserves. That's a move that increases pressure on the Kremlin, which could lead to debt default, Chip.
Yeah, it's just a terrible situation. The amount of bombardment that some of the cities have taken, like it says, just leaving these places unrecognizable, it's terrible.
USDA yesterday published a notice of funding availability on the Emergency Livestock Relief Program in the Federal Register, formally launching the effort, which will automatically generate payments to livestock producers who have faced increased supplemental feed costs from forage losses due to a qualifying drought or wildfire in calendar 2021. Senate negotiators struck a deal on $10 billion in COVID aid on Monday, setting the chamber on a potential course to clear the bill this week. Chip, the lockdown in Shanghai has been extended to cover the entire city after authorities reported more than 13,000 COVID cases with restrictions on the city's western district in place until further notice. About 23 cities across China under total or partial lockdowns currently.
Europe. The warnings here in the U.S. are going up, too. Another wave coming. Yeah.
And Europe-bound rail shipments from China that passed through Russia have been plummeting, according to the Wall Street Journal, dealing a setback to the $4 trillion Belt and Road Initiative aimed at cementing China's role as a preeminent trading force in the region. Chip.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Let's bring in Karen Bonert, editor of Farm Journal's Milk. Good morning, Karen. How are you?
I'm good, Chip. How are you?
Good, good, good. What in the heck happened out in Tulare County?
Yeah, well, obviously this story will shake you in your boots. Last week, gunfire was a result of a crime spree that spanned five rural Tulare County, California dairies. So what happened is the suspects zigzagged their way across the southern portion of the county, robbing multiple suspects, all of which were employees at five different dairies. This all ended in gunfire, although thankfully no one was injured. But employees told the police they were held up at gunpoint and robbed from their wallets and cell phones. So the deputies arrested the four men, Chip, including two juvenile boys on suspicion of robbery, attempted murder of a police officer, and a conspiracy to commit a felony. So they can get the full story at dairyherd.com. It's kind of one of those that will get your heart beating. But what to do if you find yourself in this situation? Well,
yeah.
Obviously, immediately call the police. Then notify your neighbors by phone or text or putting a social media post out. And really, it makes us think that we need to develop and implement a farm security plan to invest in camera systems. And if you can't afford that, install some type of dummy camera and post signs that your property is being monitored by cameras, regardless if it's they're real or fake, to hopefully, you know, deter this from happening. Take photos of your equipment, tools, and machinery. Turn off your switch to the fuel tank at night to inhibit someone from pumping gas. Although in this case, the suspects weren't looking at taking machinery or fuel. Again, the full story, Chip's at dairyherd.com. It's crazy because dairies literally are 24/7, right? So generally there's always somebody working on the farm day or night, which is obviously good. They're caring for the cattle, but that's where their attention's at. So they're in the parlor, they're in the barn. They're not on lookout for, you know, thieves and for someone that's going to come in and do something like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Karen, thank you so much. Wow, that is scary stuff when it ends in a gunfight, no question about it. Okay, we're going to get to the bottom of the bird flu cases in Iowa. Mike Neggs next on AgriTalk.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Clarifly Larvicide, your feed-through fly control solution.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
AgriTalk is brought to you by new Bond Silage Speed Z, aerobically stable corn silage in 14 days. Learn more at bondsilageusa.com/speed. It's fast.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Lorre. Glad that you are with us this morning. We've got Davis Michelson standing by
Hello.
As well.
Yes.
And we are ready for a conversation with Mike Nagg. Mike is the Iowa Secretary of Agriculture, and he joins us right now. Secretary Nagg, welcome back to AgriTalk.
Hi, Chip. It's great to be back.
Glad that you're here. I wish it was under for a more enjoyable conversation, but it is what it is. The best news that I heard this morning was news that I didn't hear because there was not another announcement of a confirmed case in Iowa this morning. That's good news.
Well, you're right. I wish I was just here talking about how spring planting is upon us and the weather's great. We're all rolling, right? But yeah, unfortunately, we're dealing with high-path AI again in the state of Iowa, and we haven't had to do that since 2015. But boy, there's a whole lot of states, 24 now, I think, that have confirmed cases. So this is really a big deal across a big chunk of the United States.
Yeah, absolutely, it is, and it. It's unbelievably unfortunate. What we've got 12 commercial flocks and 2 backyard cases in Iowa, nearly 13.3 million birds. Is that the latest count?
That's right where we are. Well, actually, we're going to continue to unfortunately be making some news over the next couple of days.
Okay.
And I can't quite break that just yet, but there are additional cases that are coming, and that's not entirely unexpected. Again, when you look at what's right. happening across the country, when you look at where we are in the migratory situation, where birds are and the weather, I think we're going to be doing this, unfortunately, for a while yet, as we wait for those birds to move north and carry that virus out of here.
Right. Listen, when you're speaking from experience on this, because you were the deputy secretary in 2015 when we had the last big outbreak in the state, how does this compare so far, Secretary Nagg? How does it feel?
Yeah, you know, and I've said many times, I sure do wish this was something I didn't have experience with, meaning
right.
I wish we'd never had to do it, but we did. And, you know, 2015, that outbreak that year still ranks as the largest animal disease outbreak in U.S. history. Now, unfortunately, this one's got the makings of potentially surpassing that. We'll see. Hopefully not. And we're working hard to ensure it doesn't. But we did learn lessons coming out of 15. We knew that states had to do more. We had to build capacity to respond locally, before the USDA arrived. And so we've been working hard to do that. We do have USDA team in the state with us right now, supporting us and working side by side with us. And we appreciate that. And collectively, we've learned a lot. How do you detect this virus quicker, earlier? And then how do you act quicker to depopulate those birds and then, effectively dispose and contain that virus on those sites? That is the key from a response standpoint. But I have to give a lot of credit to the industry, to poultry producers. We saw a lot of lateral spread back in 2015. It moved from farm to farm. We're not seeing that as much this year. We're seeing a lot of wild bird introductions, which tells me that the industry did a lot on biosecurity, but there's always more that we can do.
Secretary Nagg, how do we know that? How do we know that it is from a wild bird source rather than farm to farm?
You bet. And those are things that the USDA and laboratories like Iowa State's Veterinary Diagnostic Lab, they can look at the genetics of that virus and they can determine just like we went through the last couple of years on COVID, right? Where you can start to identify strains or you can identify and connect spread. And the same things can be done for high path. And so what we are continuing to see is that You're not seeing connections between farms, at least not largely. I mean, there are cases where it is happening. There's some hot spots, but it appears that this one, and that is a significant difference over 2015, is you've got these wild bird introductions. Now, that's good that it means we're doing a better job responding and there's biosecurity. It's challenging because there's not always a lot you can do to prevent a wild bird. You know, they're going to go where they want to go. And right. that does create a whole set of different, unique challenges for us this time around.
Yeah, and the wild birds, can they infect like water sources for the commercial flocks and so on?
Not a lot known about that just yet. But I think, look, it's true that you can have, there's a lot of different ways that this interaction can occur. I mean, there's obviously feces involved and you know, that droppings can occur in the building or around ventilation or maybe right outside the door of a building. Those are all the types of questions, though, that we all have is how does this move and how are these infections occurring? And then, of course, what can you do to mitigate that? So I'd say the jury's still out on some of those, you know, actual very right. technical questions of how's this happening?
Right, right. The timing of the first mm-hmm. outbreak in Iowa this time versus 2015, is it similar or how does it compare?
Well, that's a great question. Unfortunately, it's very different. We did not start the 2015 outbreak until the middle of April. I believe it was around April 15th. And then here this year, we had our first confirmation on March 1st. So we will have already been at this a month and a half by the time that 15 started. Again, it's different in the sense that, remember that we had lateral movement, which meant that right. 2015 outbreak lasted longer. It dragged on. We're trying to look at this and say, all right, if we're doing a good job from biosecurity and from an effective response and we're containing the virus, can we shorten that? And that's what we're hopeful of, and that's what we're focused on. But yeah, we were a full month and a half ahead of where we started at 15.
Yeah, that is concerning. Wow. Okay. Mm-hmm. Secretary Nag, talk to the those out there that might have three or four hens in the backyard. What do they yeah. need to do to help prevent the spread?
You know, the message is clear. Regardless, if you've got that backyard flock, a few laying hens, or you're a large producer and you're taking care of a lot of birds, the message is the same, and it's all about biosecurity, right? It's all about trying to minimize or prevent that contact between wild birds and domestic birds. You know, that's things like watching what you're doing with your boots. Are you walking across the yard and then walking into an enclosure with the birds? You could drag something in from outside. And then, of course, the other piece is that we are just asking that folks have awareness around what are the symptoms of avian influenza. If you see any signs or any suspicion at all that you know, the birds are lethargic, they went off feed, they aren't drinking as much water, the eggs that they're laying aren't quite right. Those are all the types of symptoms that you need to call somebody. Call the Iowa Department of Ag. Talk with one of our veterinarians. Okay. We'll get those birds sampled, get them tested, get those to Ames. And we can find out whether we're dealing with it or not. Hey, the good news would be, hey, if there's something else going on, or nope, it's not high path. You don't need to worry about it. But it's affecting every single poultry producer, whether you've got a confirmed case or not. You are affected by this outbreak because you're working day and night to try to prevent it.
And don't think that just because you're out of one of the major flyways in the state that you can mm-hmm. let your guard down. This is something that everybody has to be watching for, right?
Well, yeah, that's right. And then again, that's where you go back to this wild bird introduction and you say, where are you safe from that? Well, nowhere. You can't look at the map and say, well, that's happening on the western part of the state or that's happening over here. No, because it's in the flyway, because it's, and again, we're watching what's happening all across the eastern United States. And as it came into the Midwest, that it is prevalent in the wild bird population. So you've got to know that, again, whether you're a large producer or small. Be paying attention and know what you're looking for and then call.
Now, if it is confirmed in a commercial flock, whether it be layers or meat birds, what's the process?
Yeah, so what we do, and again, we're trying to get those detections early. We will quarantine that commercial site. And then, unfortunately, those birds have to be euthanized. And the reason being, that not every bird on a site is sick, right? But they will suffer and they will die from high path right. avian influenza. And so we can minimize their suffering. And also, if you take down that bird population, you euthanize those birds and you dispose of them properly, what you've just done is you've eliminated the virus host. That means you can't be making more and more virus that has an opportunity to spread. That's the focus. That's what USDA and the Department of Ag are incredibly focused on, is contain it and dispose of it right there on that site to try to minimize the opportunity to spread.
Right.
In doing that, we hope that we're able to protect birds and certainly the birds in that area.
Right. Hopefully what we learned from 2015 is going to prevent this from getting worse, but time is on the virus's side right now, so we've got to stay alert.
We do. And again, remember where we are. It's April 5th. The weather's just trying to start to warm up a little bit. We need it to warm up north and, you know, all that, and get these birds through and get some temperatures up and get the ground dried out. Those are the types of things that start to help you just, again, knock down that whole virus load that's right. out there.
Right. Okay. Secretary Nag, let's stay in touch on this. We'll get an update from you soon.
Sounds good. Thanks.
All right. Good luck. Good luck. Unfortunately, as he said, a couple of announcements coming here in the next day or two on more cases in the state of Iowa. We're going to talk ethanol next, right here on AgriTalk.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from ProFarmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beach, we've got some strength going in the grain markets again today, and wheat is trying to be the leader to the upside. Little focus on the domestic crop today?
Yeah, wheat's trading sharply higher here, led by the winter wheat markets, and but the well off the session highs, but still, those winter wheat crop condition ratings that yesterday afternoon from USDA came in well below what was anticipated, only 30% of the crop is rated good to excellent. So just a very poor rating here to kick off the spring. Going to need some really timely spring rains. And even then, some of those acres are probably going to be torn up and abandoned and planted to other crops potentially.
Yeah. Yeah. This is really a tough situation for that winter wheat crop. Spillover support into corn and to the soy complex.
The wheat is the driver today and the other markets followers. Of note, I think, is that, limited buyer interest in the crude oil market, which is limiting buyer interest in soy oil. And so that's something to probably watch as we move through the rest of the session here.
Okay, very good. We've got strength in corn and pressure on feeder cattle. It's got the whole complex under some pressure.
Yeah, it seems to go hand in hand there. Pretty heavy pressure in the feeders this morning, and that's spilling over into live cattle futures as well. Now, we did have some steady trade in the cash cattle market yesterday. That came much earlier than anticipated, and probably feedlots fearing that cash prices will soften as the week goes on.
All right. Hogs, actually some mixed trade. That's good news.
Yeah, poor performance again yesterday. Limited seller interest so far this morning, so that is some good news.
All right, thank you, Brian. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Your next piece of equipment is on MachineryPete.com.
Search equipment from dealerships across the country to find what you're looking for. Only on MachineRepeat.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Glad that you're with us. Boy, unfortunate situation we're talked about there with Iowa Ag Secretary Mike Nagy about bird flu in Iowa. And as he said, 24 states, Davis. Good
yes.
grief.
Well, and this just in more info to come shortly on that.
Yeah, right, right. So heads up, keep a watch out there of your flocks. Okay, let's talk about ethanol and biofuels with Brian Jennings. Brian is the CEO of the American Coalition for Ethanol, better known as ACE. Brian, welcome back to AgriTalk. How are you?
Hey, Chip. I'm doing all right, thanks.
Good. Good, good, good. Brian, it's such a pivotal time for biofuels because there's unbelievable opportunity in front of us. Yet we continue to do battle against some of the misinformation and just bad research, like the study that came out of the University of Wisconsin not that long ago. But the bottom line is, they shouldn't be able to pick and choose which models we're using. Use the best model in analyzing how good of a fuel ethanol is or isn't, correct?
Well, that's exactly right. And I think what you're referring to is EPA is taking comment. It actually closed on Friday, but taking comment on updating the assumptions that the agency uses around the carbon footprint of various biofuels and right. land use is part of that. And that's the University of Wisconsin study you talked about. And,
right.
you know, it's been a dozen years since EPA has looked at the models and the latest science. And I remind you, Chip, and your listeners that when Michael Regan was nominated by the president to serve as the administrator of EPA and Regan was going through the Senate confirmation process, his calling card was I'm going to follow the science. And so we're trying to make it really clear to EPA that there's no better time for Administrator Regan to make good on that than to update the modeling that the agency uses around the carbon footprint assumptions of corn ethanol and other biofuels.
So what is the model that ACE and other biofuel supporters want EPA to use?
Well, there are a half dozen or more out there, but we think the gold standard is something called the GREET model, Chip. And that was developed by the Department of Energy. It stands for greenhouse gas, regulated emissions, and energy use in technologies. It used to be transportation, but now they count electric vehicles, for example, and they do carbon footprint analysis on that. It's by far the most widely accepted model across the globe for determining the life cycle carbon footprint of various fuels. And importantly, the scientists at the Department of Energy update the GREET model every single year. So they take into account efficiencies that occur within ethanol facilities. They take into account how farmers have become more efficient over the years, for example, with fertilizer application, because nitrous oxide emissions is a very lethal greenhouse gas, and that gets counted in our carbon footprint. So the GREET model is really the only one out there that makes adjustments over time to reflect what's happening in the real world. And that's ultimately why we want EPA and frankly, other regulators to adhere to it.
Brian, I think you might be asking a lot for EPA to use a real-world model in figuring out what to do with ethanol going forward.
Yeah, sadly, that may be the case. But again, I think we really are trying to sort of open that door that Michael Regan cracked open a bit when he said, when it comes to biofuels, I'm going to follow the law. We're still sort of waiting for that to happen.
Yep.
And I'm going to follow the science. And, you know, EPA's outdated assumption, they suggest what? Corn ethanol is only about 20% cleaner than gasoline when it comes to reducing greenhouse gas emissions. The latest GREET model would suggest that corn ethanol is 50 to 60% cleaner.
Right.
than gasoline. And goodness gracious, Chip, even the California Air Resources Board, who administers the low carbon fuel standard, and we all know they favor electric vehicles over any other technology. They even suggest corn ethanol is cleaner than EPA does. And so EPA is really out of bounds, and we've got to get them to update their modeling.
What's the hesitation, do you think, Brian, for EPA to adopt GREET?
Well, one of the things EPA has said to us over time is, look, we've grandfathered all corn ethanol into the system. And so even if you argue that corn ethanol is 50 or 60% cleaner than gasoline, it doesn't really matter because your product still qualifies for the RFS. But it does matter because other countries look at EPA's assumptions and they say, okay, we're going to have a clean fuel program in Canada or Brazil, but hey, corn ethanol from the U.S. doesn't qualify because it's not clean enough. And they use the EPA modeling as the excuse. And so it is incredibly important that EPA update this, and because we're going to have these new clean fuel markets, hopefully in Midwest states. We're probably going to have one at the federal level someday. This needs to get done.
Yeah, absolutely. It needs to get done because, as I said at the start of the conversation, we've got so many opportunities. And if we can go out, if the industry can go out and tell that positive story about 50 to 60% better, cleaner, then that's the kind of environmental message that so many consumers are looking for, Brian. We need to be, the industry needs to be able to tell that story. It's imperative.
Not only that, but ethanol is the only low-carbon fuel chip that can get both to net zero and net negative greenhouse gas emissions. When you start taking into account these reduced tillage practices, which build carbon in the soil, the more efficient use of fertilizer, which reduces nitrous oxide emissions. And then you tack onto that carbon capture and sequestration. Yeah. That's a trajectory to net negative that electric vehicles can't get to. No other low carbon fuel can get to.
Right. And we're going to be talking more and more about the push for net negative on carbon and ethanol going forward. Big push on E15 right now. What are the odds and how much help is it at the pump for those low-income consumers that Davis and I were talking about at the start of the show?
Well, on the latter topic first, this is an enormous opportunity to save consumers money at the pump. You know, the last several weeks, ethanol has traded a buck under in wholesale markets. We're a little bit less than that today, right? 75 to 80, 90 cents under RBOB. But you factor in the RIN value. We have E15 being sold in certain parts of the country for 30 cents or more per gallon, less than regular. You're saving at least a nickel to a dime per gallon in many markets, but more in others. And so the cost savings is gigantic when we're dealing with record high gasoline prices. You know, we scratch our heads about the Biden administration and seemingly looking at every opportunity and under every rock except for the one that's right in front of their face when it comes to dealing with this issue. But I think there's so much momentum building, right? In Congress, we have Democratic and Republican attorneys generals now writing EPA about this. We have Democratic and Republican governors. And our sense is that within the Biden White House, there are some that are resistant to this for various sort of strange political reasons. So maybe Biden isn't unilaterally going to do something on his own, but in response to all of these requests from red and blue and purple states about how allowing E15 during the summer months makes so much sense, I think that's going to eventually sort of get the job done, at least for those states.
They've had several opportunities to mention biofuels as a way to bring down prices at the pump. And so far it's been a miss. I don't understand the hesitation to use biofuels to their advantage.
It's enormously frustrating to me too, because this is what I do for a living. You know, we have allies, right? Like Secretary Vilsack and others in the administration that are doing their level best to advocate for this common sense step. But Chip, we've also got folks that, you know, work in the White House and work in EPA. It kind of goes back to the first topic we were talking about. They mistakenly believe that corn ethanol is somehow radioactive material when it comes to greenhouse gas emissions or other issues. And so that sort of taint is coloring their view on, okay, let's allow E15 year round. And so it's breaking through that we've really got to do. And I think we will eventually get it done. Look, literally every Republican and Democrat from the Corn Belt on the Hill is pounding on the White House door right now. States are pounding on the door. Biden knows he's not doing enough about gas prices. And here is a low hanging fruit that he can pick and really do something in a meaningful way.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, part of the effort or part of the issue here is that consumers are still so ready and willing to believe and accept misinformation that comes their way. But when the facts are presented in a scientific manner, they just choose to ignore it way too often. And that's got to stop. The ethanol deniers have got to come around, Brian. Hopefully that can happen and happen here soon. Man, good luck to you, Brian. Let's talk again soon and get an update, okay?
Very good. Thanks, Chip.
All right. Thank you, Brian. That is Brian Jennings, CEO of the American Coalition for Ethanol. Davis and I will be back to wrap up today's first hour of AgriTalk in a moment.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Find farm equipment on Machinery Pete's April 19 online auction. No reserve, no buyer fees. Start bidding now. Auctions.machinerypete.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. Your pal Davis Michelson here with Chip Flory. Chip and I are going to have a little chip chat right after this industry spotlight.
Growers CEO Stephen Valenson founded Growers over a decade ago because he saw an opportunity to push technology forward in the ag industry. Today, that passion is focused on championing the ag retailer's role in the increasingly competitive marketplace. He joins us right now. Stephen, how does a small to mid-sized retailer compete in this ever-changing retail environment?
Yeah, the way that we think they have the best chance of competing is trying to win where others can't and focusing a lot more on being easier to do business with, increasing the engagement that they have with their customers, and really trying to alleviate some of the biggest pain points that farmers have when working with ag retailers, which is no real visibility into accurate pricing. It's really difficult to manage the whole quoting process, things like poor communication. Smaller companies traditionally should be able to do a much better job at that. And we built the technology platform that enables that experience between the retailer and the farmer.
Yeah, I was going to say, Stephen, you've got to have the right platform to make that happen. Tell us about the platform at Growers.
We started by building a platform we call Growers Rally because we think that this whole process of serving farmers better starts with using a sales platform that a sales team will actually use, where they can create, you know, accurate professional quotes and respond to farmers in seconds. And then giving executives at these retail organizations this like unsurpassed level of visibility on how their business is performing and who their customer really is. So if you can capture all that information in one cohesive spot, these smaller organizations that we're working with are very well informed about who their customer is and what their needs are, which enables them to address them much, much faster and more professionally.
Yeah, very good. Where do we go for more information, Stephen?
So you can find a lot of information about us on the website.
Excellent. www.growers.ag. Thank you, Stephen. That is Stephen Valinson, CEO at Growers.
All right. Welcome back to AgriTalk. Davis Michelson here. Chip Flory. Did I say that already, Chip? Did I mention that?
You might have. It's all
good. Did I mention that? Okay.
Yeah.
The Secretary of Agriculture from our own beloved state of Iowa, the tall corn state, talking about something that has been on the minds of just regular folk, non-farm folk, urban dwellers even, for, I don't know, going on 2 years, maybe even a little better. Due diligence when it comes to pathogen control, disease control, doing the things that you need to do to stop the spread. And now it falls to the poultry growers of the U.S.
Right. And as he said, this is something that you'd rather not have experience in dealing with this, but the state of Iowa has got extensive experience in dealing with high path avian influenza. And as a result of that, you could hear it in Secretary Nag's voice that he is very concerned.
I thought
that
so too.
This is going to get worse before it gets better. It's almost like it's got that running start because it initiated 6 weeks earlier than what it did in 2015. I'm not exactly sure if that's how it's going to work or not, because like he said, in 2015 we had that location to location spreading of the disease. That so far, hopefully is not happening at this point. The concern is obviously with the wild birds spreading the virus through the commercial flocks. But boy, Davis, we've already got enough pressure on food prices. We don't need any kind of a short-term scarcity of table eggs driving prices up even more. Now, when I talked with Jim Wiesmeyer, Pro Farmer Policy Analyst, about this yesterday morning on Signal to Noise, he just said egg prices are going up. They are going to go up because this is going to get worse before it gets better. I understand that it probably will. I just don't want to make the assumption that it's going to get as bad as it was in 2015 because of the experience that we've gotten dealing with it.
Well, one of the things that I've sort of been attuned to, one of the things I've been watching, is the idea of what happens to a supply chain when you punch a hole in production. We saw it in fertilizers and it pushed prices higher. You punch a hole in something and it takes a while to recover. And you know, it is a manageable crisis, but when you've got to call out a poultry barn.
Yeah.
Barn? Is a barn? You got a milking parlor, you got a horse stable. Is it a poultry barn?
Yes, it is a barn.
You got to clear those out. I mean, you can't just snap your fingers and now magically you've got more eggs, more birds, more broilers.
Right. The hole that we're punching in the supply might be for eggs or turkey, okay?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But the problem is to replace or refill that hole, you've got to reestablish your flock.
Yep.
And you don't just fill up a barn with hens that are all the same age.
Right.
You've got to stage those animals into the barn so that you can have different aged hens all working at the same time in that barn so that when the productivity goes down, they become chicken noodle soup.
Right.
It's all part of a very extensive process. And think about it. Think about it, Davis. I mean, these barns, 5 million birds in a barn.
It's no small flock.
Holy smokes, is it not a small flock? It is something that is jarring for the individual producers. It's just
I wanted to also get to those crop condition ratings that Brian Grady mentioned. I don't know if we've got time or not. Maybe we should make plans
to
hit
this
that
afternoon.
At some point in the afternoon. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. We'll do it in the news this afternoon. All right. Let's plan on doing that. Thanks for listening this morning. Thanks to Secretary Nag and to Brian Jennings for coming on the show with us here today. This afternoon, we've got Dwayne Bussey from Bolt Marketing coming your way. And tomorrow morning, Jim Mintert and a Farmer Forum right here on AgriTalk.